I'm Peter Hall, program host at Classical WNED, and I'm talking with the music director of the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra, Joanne Folletta. Hi, Joanne.
Hello, Peter. Good to see you. Good to be here at the studios.
Well, another new CD coming out, and it's on the Naxos label. So you at the Buffalo Philharmonic have recently recorded music by Doc Nanyi and Josef Suk and Béla Bartók and Vyacheslav Novák, all for Naxos. What is it about this Eastern European repertoire you guys like so much?
Well, you know, first of all, Klaus Heyman has identified the sound that he hears in the Buffalo Philharmonic recording as being very suited to Eastern Europe and Russia. He really feels the orchestra has a certain sound that makes this music glow. And I agree, because I think two things. I mean, we have a very deep-throated sound in the Philharmonic, partly because of our wonderful hall, but also the way the musicians play. And they play with a big personality, Peter. This is what I especially love about the Philharmonic. They're not afraid to take chances. They're not afraid to go a little wild. And you need that for some of this music. Now, in Kodály, which is gypsy music, you really need it. And I think they were wild in this repertoire. They just were extraordinary and very much in the spirit. So we've enjoyed the Eastern European music, and I think it does suit the orchestra.
This Kodály project, as so many projects I gather at Naxos, was kind of driven by Klaus Heyman.
It was. And you know, when he heard the finished product, he wrote a little note back to me, which I should tell the orchestra. He wrote a little note saying, "Are you sure you don't all have Hungarian grandfathers?" Which I thought was a very nice compliment.
When we hear the name Zoltán Kodály, usually somebody quickly starts talking about his Hungarian colleague, Béla Bartók. I've got to ask you, how are they similar and how are they different?
That's a good question, because they are linked together and they were great fans of each other and very close to each other. And they were the two who started out on a journey when they were both very young to preserve and save Hungarian folk music. They went together into the smallest villages in Hungary to people who, of course, couldn't read music and couldn't write it down, and asked them to sing the folk songs they knew and the folk songs that their grandparents knew, and they recorded them. They recorded them on an old machine, an Edison machine, and if no access to that, they would just take dictation and write these folk songs down, because they rightly knew that in the changing world of the 20th century, these songs would be lost forever. So they went to the taverns, they went to the bars, they went to the places where they could even find the oldest people in the village and said, "Okay, sing us your songs." They had spent a lot of time together, and they both agreed that it was one of the most wonderful experiences of their lives, because they were going to very poor places, of course, not in luxurious accommodations, but they felt that they learned what life was really about. They were with the people of Hungary, and these folk songs made their way into the very marrow of their work. I mean, whatever they produced, unconsciously, subconsciously, semi-consciously, reflected these melodies. So it completely changed their voice. But they did go in slightly different directions, keeping at the core the Hungarian folk song, because both of them did. Bartók went in a slightly more obscure and esoteric direction. His music became more modern, and yet there's folk songs under everything. Kodály stayed closer to the spirit of the original folk songs. His music is immediately appealing and very captivating, I think.
Now, Kodály grew up in Galanta in Western Hungary, and we're going to talk about a work of his that uses the hometown name. But in general, I mean, growing up there, I know he went out, as you say, and he traveled and he recorded. But just growing up in Hungary, how do you think that influenced him?
Well, that town influenced him a great deal, because he was a child there. He spent his whole childhood there. And he said it was the happiest time of his life. And the town, Galanta, actually had a very famous gypsy band living there. And they would perform all the time, and they were really renowned. That was the first music he ever heard as a child. And he became great friends with the gypsy children, too. I mean, he played with them. They played for him. He got to know their music. So that was a kind of bedrock for him of the specific Galanta gypsy music.
Well, from what you say, and certainly from listening to the music, we know that he was influenced by the gypsies, the Magyar people, and their music did find its way into his music. But as a music director, can you tell us, you know, what are the telltale fingerprints of that gypsy music? How How do we hear it come out in Kodály's music?
Oh, there are certain trademarks that the Gypsies had. For pieces often, their pieces, their music often started with a slow introduction. And some of the things they loved to do there was great use of course, extravagantly virtuosic violin writing, which they loved. And they were fabulous fiddlers. I mean, they were incredible violinists. They loved the clarinet as well. And the Galanta group particularly had a virtuoso clarinetist, and you will hear that later on in Galanta Dances. The use of woodwinds is magnificent. I mean, they're all soloists. They're all required to do brilliant bravura things. The kind of dotted rhythm that was so dance-like, we hear that in there. It's music that comes right from the people singing and dancing, and it's unmistakable. And no matter what country you're from, there's a certain energy in folk music that you feel, and we hear all of that in Kodály's music.
One of your musicians once told me that when playing this kind of music, you really have to be on your toes. The rhythms are tough.
It's very tough. You know, it sounds just like fun music, but it's very tough. First of all, it's much of it is whizzing by at an extraordinarily fast tempo. And the little figures are not always the same. I mean, they're very tricky, and there are a lot of solos. And there's a kind of something I enjoy in listening to this music and conducting it. There's a kind of one-upsmanship, which, you know, if you can imagine the two gypsies by the campfire saying, oh, yeah, well, I can play it even better. So you'll hear an oboe play a solo, and then the clarinet says, listen to me play it, you know. So there's this kind of almost kind of fun, friendly competition between players, and it makes for a lot of energy in the piece.
I have heard that, but I didn't realize what was going on. Yeah. It's sort of like a little battle of the bands within
the
orchestra.
Yeah, you know, like dueling banjos or something in gypsy style. And so it really gives the performance a lot of fire because people are playing at their absolute limit of tempos. And it's fun. It's really fun.
Well, let's get down to some specifics. The CD is jam-packed with four wonderful pieces. So if you don't mind, can we sort of take them one by one?
Yeah, let's start with the Marasek, you think?
Sure. So Dances of Marasek. What
right.
about that?
Right. This is the first of the group that was written in 1930. This comes right from those trips to the Hungarian countryside. Transylvania especially was rich in its cultural heritage. We think of it as Dracula's home, which it was, but Transylvania was also supposedly one of the most beautiful places in Hungary. It was called a fairy tale, fairyland, I think they called it, because of its waterfalls and beautiful forests. And he spent a lot of time there compiling dances. The dances you hear in Marasek are original Hungarian dances. He first wrote them in a solo piano work, which he actually called Village Dances, and from the village in 1923, but he orchestrated them in this brilliant orchestral showpiece in 1930. And it's a kind of rondo form where the original dance keeps coming back. Some of them are lively, some of them are lyrical. Of course, he ends in a very jubilant folk dance. So this is a tremendous piece and a lot of fun for us. Dances of Marasek by Zoltán Kodály, a wonderful way to start our CD.
Wow. That was wild, but it's not the only wild music on this CD. There's another wild set of dances, the Galanta dances. And I got to tell you, this seems to be one of your favorites. You know, I remember the orchestra brought this one to Carnegie Hall.
We did, and they played it so brilliantly. It is one of my favorites, and it surprises people who don't know Kodály's music, and they hear this and they say, I loved that piece. How come it's not played all the time? Well, we hope it will be. This one comes right from his home, his growing up in Galanta. That gypsy band, the children of the players of the gypsy band that he knew, the music that he loved, that lived in his soul all of his life. So in 1933, when the Budapest Philharmonic asked him to compose a piece for them in honor of their 80th anniversary, he went back to those memories of childhood, those wonderful songs he probably could still sing and knew very well, and created the Dances of Galanta right from his hometown. Again, filled with dotted rhythms, syncopation, fast figuration, brilliant performing style of that virtuoso gypsy band. And I always say that Kodály transforms a symphony orchestra into a gypsy band. In reality, you could be back in Galanta hearing that extraordinary band playing when you listen to this music, the Galanta Dances.
Like his countryman and friend, Béla Bartók, Zoltán Kodály was a true patriot of Hungary. And this comes out in a longer, more introspective, probing work, his Peacock Variations.
The Peacock Variations is a very important work in Kodály's history, and it does show the struggle and the difficulty of the Hungarian situation, which Bartók knew well and Kodály knew well. And he takes the theme from an ancient folk song, and perhaps this explains a little bit the Hungarian spirit, with a rather cryptic text. The peacock flew over the prison and freed the prisoners. The peacock flew over the prison and did not free the prisoners. That is the essence of this piece. It's printed in the score. And I asked my teacher, George Mester, who was Hungarian. I said, George, what does this mean? And he said, you have to be Hungarian to understand it. So he would never talk about it. So that's what I say. You have to be Hungarian to understand it. But the peacock, the bird, was the symbol for Hungarian liberation, for Hungarian freedom. And the theme that he constructs always moves up. Always goes upward. So he gives us actually a physical feeling of the peacock flying to freedom, constantly flying to freedom. It's based upon an ancient melody written in a pentatonic mode. It's a very ancient piece, but he constructs 16 variations that are some of them incredibly exciting, some of them mystical, some of them remote, all ingenious. These are virtuoso variations, and it shows us Kodály at probably his greatest writing in the Peacock Variations. He wrote it for the 50th anniversary of the Concertgebouw Orchestra, and it's remained a hallmark piece. And in a way, it combines his knowledge of the sophisticated music of the world with his love of his country. And interestingly, you know, we talk about the gypsy music and Hungarian music. At one time, there was an attempt to separate which was actually Hungarian, non-gypsy, and which was gypsy. And both Bartók and Kodály, in the end, said that both schools had so much influenced each other that there was only one school. It was Hungarian folk music. It was the music of the gypsies. So we hear that in this truly beautiful piece, the Peacock Variations. Thank you.
finally on the CD, a work that I gather is extremely rarely performed, his Concerto for Orchestra. Now, I know of Zoltán Kodály's countryman, Béla Bartók's Concerto for Orchestra, but before we talk about that, first off, what is a concerto? Wait a minute. I mean, there are concertos for violin and concertos for piano. What is a concerto for orchestra?
It is a title that makes you think. In Bartók's case, and probably Kodály's case as well, Bartók said this, he was celebrating the great virtuosity of the symphony orchestra. At that point, this is the 1940s, orchestras were really playing brilliantly, and they wanted to celebrate that sort of everybody is a soloist feeling in the orchestra, which we know today is certainly true. But in Kodály's situation, writing it in 1940, he was actually thinking more of a Baroque concerto for orchestra, he said, where we had the tutti playing sometimes, and then sometimes either a small group or a soloist, and it would alternate between the large orchestra and then a small group of soloists playing. So he also had that Baroque tradition in mind and created a really extraordinary piece that the BPO had never played in its entire history. So this was our very first time discovering this work.
I'm not going to ask you which came first, the chicken or the egg, but I will ask you, which came first, Bartók or Kodály's Concerto for Orchestra?
Kodály's Concerto for Orchestra came first, written in 1940 for a special anniversary of the Chicago Symphony. Then Bartók's followed 4 or 5 years later. He was working on it. So I wonder if Kodály's gave Bartók the idea of writing for the symphony orchestra in that way. Both pieces are fabulous. Bartók's, of course, is very well known and played very often, but Kodály's is almost never played. And I wanted to discover why. I want to take a look at this. And it's brilliant music, really brilliant music. I think somehow at that time, you know, the United States was getting involved in the war. It was a tough time for music. People were maybe not looking for new things and were repeating new pieces. It somehow was one of those pieces that's got a little bit lost in the cracks of music history. And I was so glad to personally discover it and then to have the chance to record it in a way that maybe people will play this more often now.
Well, speaking as a radio program host, I can tell you that is one of the great things about the Naxos Recording Company, that it's not just the same old, year in and year out. Klaus Heyman brings to the fore these wonderful pieces and very often asks you to record them.
Yeah, he does. And the concerto was for him the centerpiece of this disc. That was the piece he was most interested in. And then, of course, we were able to surround it by three other Kodály masterpieces.
Now, a little insider baseball here. Okay, so there's the score of this piece that doesn't get played all that often, and you borrowed the music for the musicians to play directly from the Chicago Symphony?
We did. And this was amazing to us because when we got the parts and the score, they were heavily annotated in different color pencils.
So who would have done that?
Well, we didn't know. And our librarian called back, Trevor called Chicago, and they feel very strongly that those were changes that Kodály made after the first performance, which would make complete sense. You know, any composer hearing a piece for the first time always has little things, whether it's, I think that trombone should be louder, or, you know, I'm going to double that with a double basses, or little changes. And in this case, those changes were really notated in the parts. Perhaps the Chicago Symphony was going to get all of these to the publisher and have them reissue the piece. That never happened. Many thanks to Travis Hendra and Pat Kimball, our librarians, for finding this extraordinary set of marked parts and giving us the chance to do the first version, the first recording of their revised version according to Kodály himself. But what we were looking at was changes that Kodály himself had made. And I was thrilled beyond words when this finally started to sink in. Travis told me that they were probably the composer himself. I just couldn't believe it. I felt really, Peter, as if I had the composer sitting there on a chair, as we often do when we do new music, right next to me to sort of help us understand that he was there in spirit saying, okay, finally, now my changes are going to be made. And these changes really brought a certain brilliance, a certain kind of new level of clarity and excitement to the piece. So how we got so lucky, I don't know, to get that set that was annotated and changed right after that world premiere in Chicago. But I feel like people listening to this are now listening to what Kodai really wanted.
Wow. I'm getting goosebumps here.
It was really thrilling.
Well, we here in Buffalo, New York, have something really special. We have you and the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra and this collaboration with Naxos over the years, so we've gotten to hear some really exciting music. But do you think that this CD is going to lead to more performances of Kodai's music worldwide?
I'm hoping so, because Kodai is a name that many people know. But as you mentioned earlier, when we hear Kodai, we think of Bartok, and Bartok being so much more famous in his way tends to make us forget Kodai. But I'm hoping when people hear this music, they'll say, this is spectacular music, and in some ways more immediately approachable than the extraordinary music of Bartok, which is great on every level. But Kodai keeps that folk music close to the surface of his music, and it makes it just so much fun to listen to.
Now, I know these projects take a while to develop, so come on, tell us, what are you working on? What's the next what's the next big Naxos project?
Well, the next big Naxos disc to come out, which is going to be pretty soon, is our The Ring, the Wagner Ring, the 7 orchestral excerpts from the Wagner Ring, which was one that was like a dream project for all of us. So that will be out soon. After that, we are tackling the Respighi trilogy, the Rome trilogy. And then after that, we've got Scriabin, Poem of Ecstasy, and more Florent Schmidt. So we've got a number of projects looming over the next couple of years. And this year, Naxos is actually celebrating their 30th anniversary, and it seems to me extraordinary to think how much they've changed the music world. Not only the music recording industry in terms of encouraging this in terms of encouraging artists to find music that isn't often recorded, but in terms of our entire music world, now that we know these pieces, we think about music differently. So 30 years has great things have happened because of Klaus Heyman's imagination and the incredible people at Naxos.
Joanne Valletta, music director of the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra, featured on a number of Naxos CDs, including the latest CD, 4 major works. It's the music of Zoltán Kodály. Thank you so much for coming over to Classical WNED.
Thank you, Peter.